Welcome back to The Human Exception. This week, Nathan's going to tell us about the BITE model and how it relates to the Jehovah's Witnesses. The BITE model of authoritarian control is a system developed by Stephen Hassan designed to identify when a group or organization is exhibiting dangerous cult-like behavior. We will go through the checklist and discuss which items the Jehovah's Witnesses practice and what exactly makes them so dangerous. So expect foul language, but also we're going to be talking about abusive high-control religious tactics, so please listen with care. Let's get ready for another Human Exception. Nathan.
You know what I never thought of was expensive? Fucking thermostats.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Like
to get, like, well, I was looking to see, because, like, if you get the smarter thermostats instead of just, like, the regular one with the dial, you're supposed to be able to, they're supposed to be more energy efficient, and you can program them and whatnot. But, like, they're, like, $150 a piece.
Wow.
And a regular one is, like, $30.
That's, I never would have thought of that. I just assumed houses had them.
We have them, but ours are shitty. Like, you can't really tell actually how warm it is or not in the house. And you can't. Ours aren't programmable. I think ours are probably from, like, the original ones from when the house was built, so, like, 40 something years old. And, like, we're either cooking ourselves out of the house or freezing. But yeah, I think we're gonna end up having to spend an ungodly amount of money on thermostats.
Well, that's not fun.
Yeah.
No, but it's life, I guess.
Yep.
You're not wrong.
No. Sometimes I wish I was. I don't like to be wrong, but sometimes I don't like to be right.
I mean, that's fair. All right. Nathan.
All right. Well, today, we're going to revisit the BITE model, in terms of, obviously, cult behavior, high control religions. We were sort of, the other day, Kayla and I were discussing, like, control techniques and ways that organizations sort of make you, well, basically control your behavior, sort of make you fall in line, whether it's, like, subtle things, whether it's, like, overt. And it kind of brought me back to the BITE model and sort of looking into it again. And again, we're going to revisit my favorite cult, high control religion, whatever you would like to call it. But there is, on the Freedom of Mind website, the BITE model for Jehovah's Witnesses. And I'm going to post this in the chat for you guys if you would like to follow along. And we're going to go through the steps of the BITE model. So behavior control, information control, thought control, and emotional control. We've got a little bit of time. I'm going to try and not maybe go off for an hour, but I am going to sort of take the ideas that they have there, And you will notice that there is a lot of red and orange throughout this whole thing. So when you look through, and for anyone who may be searching for this while you're listening, just a quick overview is when the article is being investigated, when the information is being compiled, there is a large list of factors that basically need to be ticked off for in each category of behavior or information, thought, emotional control, for a organization to sort of fit into the BITE model of, is it a cult or a high control religion? If you're looking at this and anything is highlighted in green, it doesn't really pertain to the group. If it is in orange, it's usually like a subgroup of folks. And if it's in red, it is everyone. And I will tell you right now, there is a lot of fucking red in here. There is so much. And again, I wanna preface this with, you know, we're not here to obviously like point fingers at specific people. We're not saying like you are part of this organization, you are inherently a bad person. But what we want to do is educate people on what is happening within the organization, what things you should look out for, how to protect yourself, and really just sort of be able to step back and say, oh, wow, this stuff is really happening to me. Or alternatively, oh, wow, this stuff is happening to someone I care about or someone that I, you know, maybe acquainted with, that, you know, it bothers me that it's happening. It's about education. And since I grew up in the Jehovah's Witness organization, it is what I know. And I'm still, in some ways associated with folks who have also left. It is easier for me to be able to use this and sort of relate to that and share. So I just wanted to put that out there and make sure that that sort of information is there. We're going to start off with the first of the model, behavior control. Now, for those of us here, there are sort of like ranks of being a Jehovah's Witness. I wouldn't necessarily call it ranks, but you are very clearly seen as a different grade of person within the congregation or within the organization if you are a Bethelite. So the Jehovah's Witness organization has campuses that they call Bethel in many, many countries. That includes the U.S., that includes Canada. They've got one in Toronto. They have them all over the world in European countries, basically everywhere that they are not considered to, everywhere they are considered to be a religion, and they are considered to be safe to practice their worship. So if you are at Bethel, you are considered to be a volunteer, but you are taken care of while you are there. You are given free accommodation. You are fed. you still have to work on the premises. You still have to work. You are given like an allowance, so you are paid. But again, your world is pretty scheduled if you are a Bethelite. And you are living in like communal housing with other Jehovah's Witnesses. If you are a pioneer.
Yeah, so this Bethel thing, is that kind of like being like a monk kind of situation or?
Like, yes.
What are people doing here?
It's just like. If you are at Bethel, it is like you are part of the inner circle learning to be like the best of the best of JWs.
Okay. Yeah. So it's JW University kind of thing.
Or kind community of, college. Yeah. 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 If you are a pioneer, what that means is you are focusing most of your time and your energy on door-to-door work. So you're not going out just on Saturdays like most folks would. You are out there with your cart on the street, or you're going door-to-door. Although recently the door-to-door work has dwindled. But if you are a pioneer, you are considered like the front line of the recruitment work. And then obviously they have elders who are the heads of the congregation. And then they have, you know, like the rank and file. They do have ministerial servants who are basically like the assistant managers. They are one step below an elder. They help out the elders with their duties. And then you have your sort of like rank and file members who just show up. So that's just sort of the overall structure of like what your day-to-day life is. Obviously they have the governing body, which is, can be anywhere from, you know, 3 to 10 members, whatever they feel like and whoever they need to feel, whoever they need to have in at the moment. Those are sort of your overarching people who dictate policy and how the organization runs. If the governing body says anything, it's basically taken throughout the organization as the will of God. There is no like real questioning it in a lot of ways. In fact, there's just no questioning it. Nobody really questions it. They're like, oh, well, the governing body's there and they're put in place by God. So these are the things that we follow. So we'll start off now with our first bit, behavior control. The first part that under behavior control that we that generally they look for is, do they regulate an individual's physical reality? Well, this is only sort of part in part to a specific group of folks, mainly Bethelites, who are obviously in a like cloistered scenario. They don't have a lot of access to the outside world. They are allowed to obviously have interactions with their family. They can leave from time to time. But really it is, you are here at Bethel to learn to be the best Jehovah's Witness that you can be. But you do go out and you do preach from time to time. But this is your reality now. Everything else doesn't matter. So it is very regulated. It is very much like, if you are, no matter what you do at Bethel, because you are doing it, You're doing it because you're special. You're doing it because you're here. It doesn't matter if someone else snuck in a bottle of vodka and fucking shit themselves in the lobby. You're cleaning that up because you're the best person to fucking do that job. Their reality is everything that you do there, you're doing it because you were chosen. And there's nothing better than what you're doing right now.
Does getting to go to Bethel get you higher up to get a chance to become one of the 144,000?
No,
no real benefit.
There's literally fucking none. So they actually already think, as part of the tenants, and I will explain this now, because in the late 1800s, when the Jehovah's Witnesses were not Jehovah's Witnesses, when they were Bible students, and they originally thought that only 144,000 people would go to heaven, they followed that rule because they were a small group of folks. And within 20 to 40 years, they ballooned into over like a million followers. They eventually became Jehovah's Witnesses. So they eventually had to change their idea of that doctrine to be like, well, only 144,000 are anointed to go to heaven and rule beside Jesus, but everyone else is going to pass over into paradise. So going to heaven sure might be a special privilege, but as far as they are concerned, most of those people have already been born and have already died. And so they are just waiting for the Great Tribulation to be resurrected and taken to heaven, while the rest of the people are like, well, we're just waiting for paradise at this point.
So what's the difference between paradise and heaven? The ruling aspect? So it's like basically you get to be born as like a godly noble or not?
Well, the difference is paradise is on earth.
Oh, okay.
And being part of the 144,000 is basically like you died and now you become an angel to rule with Jesus.
That is fucking ludicrous.
Yeah, right?
I believe that teenagers had bad energy that made my house haunted, but that's fucking ludicrous. Just saying.
Right? Yeah. And you know, and how they determined whether someone was of the 144,000 or not was strictly based on yearly memorial attendance. So if you were to show up during at the yearly memorial, which we were talking about Easter the other day, is around Easter time. If a person were to partake of the bread and or the wine that was passed around, you would be considered one of the anointed one. Now, kids, obviously, who didn't understand the situation would sometimes try and eat the crackers. But otherwise, nobody eats it. Like, for the memorial? What? Yeah. Because, like, there are people all over the world who are like, yeah, obviously I'm an anointed person. They'll take a bite of the cracker, and then they'll take a sip of the wine, and that's how... And they're usually, like 40 at the time, like, fucking 20 years ago, they were, like, 40, 50 to, like, 80s. They were old. They were like older folks, mature folks. And slowly but surely, the numbers have been starting to come down. And that's sort of how they are establishing that, well, obviously there's not very many anointed people, and once they're all dead, it's probably going to be pretty quick by the time to the time that we're going to get to Armageddon.
That's fucking bad shit.
It's super crazy. Yeah.
Like, I try to be respectful, but also I won't be.
No, no, absolutely not. Don't. It doesn't. we're not here like, to...
No.
Yeah, we're not here to be like, it's okay.
I can't respect... I can respect things that are different than my own beliefs and opinions, but not when they oppress or hurt other people. And I feel like this is absolutely one of those times.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. So, our second thing on the list. So, the regulation of an individual's physical reality is sort of an orange mark on this one. That is usually reserved for Bethelites because it is easy to do so, right? Like, they're in a cloistered situation. They're not associating with the outside world. They're very much cut off. The next one, dictate where, how, and with whom the member lives and associates or isolates. Big red marks there, because, and there's a thing that later on that refers to loaded language, and Jehovah's Witnesses really love to, I can't say just Jehovah's Witnesses, but Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, IBLP, other high control religions, fundamentalists, etc., really love to use the word, Heaven's Gate.
Oh, yeah.
The world. Right?
Not the world.
The world. So there is us, and then there is the world. And the world very simply refers to the rest of society. There is us as a religion, and then there's the rest of society. And the rest of society is the world. And the world is controlled by Satan. And you'll notice...
Well, yeah.
Like, in every other place that... every other religion, every other organization that uses this phrase, it's the exact same, right? It's... The world is trying to take you away. Satan is trying to take you away. Yeah, exactly. So you have to only associate with people within the religion unless you're out preaching. And that's the only time that you interact with the world. So, and like, even if it's family, you really shouldn't like interact with them as much. They are family, so it's kind of okay, but like, try to keep it at a distance. The next one is to dictate when, how, and with whom the member has sex. So this was a big thing, and they've always been like waffling on this one, but from like the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even to now, they were very much trying to insert themselves into members' bedrooms. Basically, yeah. Like, you can only have sex in a way that, quote, quote, honors God. And basically, it's you can only do missionary because that's the best way to procreate. Doing it any other way is sort of like... is an affront to God. Oral sex is bad, so don't do that.
It's because you like it. So now, well, it's bad.
Exactly. And man,
it doesn't produce babies.
It doesn't produce babies.
No.
Like, and what was hilarious was when they first sort of came out with this rule, and they're like, well, you can't do oral sex. There was a huge uptick in people who started like having like this existential guilt. And they're like, oh my God, like this is one of our favorite things to do in the bedroom. Now we got to go talk to the elders and have a conversation with the elders. And suddenly the elders are being inundated with conversations that they don't want to have, right? Why are we talking about our members having sex? Well, all these people are admitting to the fact that, like, this is the thing that my husband and I really like to do, or my wife and I really like to do, and now we can't do it? Like, why? Like, where is, like, the biblical reason for this? And the elders were like, we gotta figure this shit out. Because, like, now it's really impacting...
Yeah, that's the problem.
Right? It's like super impacting the mental health of our people. Not that they care about the mental health, but they do care about
retention. Like
the retention. Yeah, absolutely. And so then it came out a couple of years later that it's like, well, it's a decision of conscience. And then, you know, they kind of go back and forth on it over the years. But it was super fucking hilarious. And they're always, and every couple of years, they will always change their stance. And they will always sort of allude to, well, you gotta do what you gotta do, but, you know, maybe just keep it inside the house and, like, don't talk to anybody about it.
Keep it inside the house versus all of the JWs who are having sex openly in the parking lot.
Exactly. Yeah. The third one, Big Red, control the types of clothing and your hairstyles. This was really big. And I have there's a Reddit post on the XJW site. Sorry, not site, subreddit. That was perfect because, there was a Watchtower article. So I guess it's the current Watchtower that they're studying, but last week's chapters that they were going over. Basically, the article meanders into how modest dress for women within the congregation is important. And you can't have your dress too short or, you know, like, or your shirt showing too much cleavage. And this person who is obviously, like, mentally out, physically in kind of thing. So they refer to they have, like, PMOs and... If you're a PMO, you are physically in, mentally out. So sometimes we get people who are reporting on the shit that they hear because they're just like, what the hell is going on? But they're still going to meetings because if they stop going to meetings, then their family will cut them off. And
yeah,
you kind of have to ride that balance, right? So this person's like, one of the sisters, middle-aged woman, who is well-endowed, gave a comment. She's like, when I wasn't married, an elder at the Kingdom Hall would have me lean over so he could see if I was showing too much.
No.
Oh my God.
Immediately jail.
And like, why would... First off, you are telling the whole congregation this. And like, nobody batted an eye. Nobody was like, that's super fucking weird.
Because it was normal. Because every dirty old man in the congregation was doing that shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like. Oh. So, yes. they're also like, well, you can't have any like wild hairstyles. You don't want to be dyeing your hair, and you don't want to be like, you don't want to do anything that's gonna make you look like part of the world. One of the previous governing body members, who went by his name was Toni Morrison, he's disappeared. He's no longer part of the governing body. Nobody knows what happened to this guy.
What's that?
He's just
dead somewhere. He's been murdered.
He went away, and there was nothing. It was just he's gone. So in the community, they refer to him as Tight Pants Tony.
Oh, was this the guy who wore his pants too tight all the time? Oh, no, he was obsessed with everybody having tight pants.
Yes.
But no homo.
He was like, no homo. He's like, you can't be wearing, he's like, young brothers, you can't be like wearing tight skinny jeans because they accentuate your junk area. And that's what like the homosexuals want. That's what the world wants. They want you to be pleasing to the homosexual eye.
They want to see that bulge.
Yeah.
I found the video of him talking about it.
Yes.
It's a 2-minute.
Excellent.
I remember watching this and being like, you are very concerned about this. It's really sad that you never got to express your sexuality in a comfortable way.
I think part of the reason why there are two lines of thought, and because of his obsession with it, is either he was gay.
Yeah.
And is gay, and he was like, well, this is the thing I can harp on and act holier than thou. Or alternatively, he disappeared without word because maybe he was involved in some sort of other situation young people.
I think Taipan Tony disappeared to Mexico and has a lover in Mexico and is living his best gay life there.
Would love that. That's the nice thing to think, and I think that's what I'm going to go with.
I just think it'd be the best way, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. They found him out and had to let him go.
Yeah, and he was like, peace. Hopefully, he didn't go to Thailand. That's all. Because you know.
Oh, I know. Anyway, moving on. So regulating food, like your diet, food, drink, hunger, fasting, deprivation of sleep, financial exploitation, manipulation, dependence. All of those, again, within Bethel, especially the financial exploitation, manipulation, and dependence. That actually sort of rolls into being like a circuit overseer or a district overseer. And those are like traveling elders who oversee particular, like obviously a circuit or a district. So a smaller group or a larger group of kingdom halls. The district and the circuit overseers are paid a monthly allowance by the organization. And like, people fucking flock to these guys, right? Like, when they come to visit, everyone in the congregation is like, hey, come to our place. We'll feed you. We'll hang out with you. We'll have a good conversation about God. And we'll show you how, like, what good Christians we are, what good Jehovah's Witnesses we are. And so when these people come in for the week, they don't pay for anything. They are housed for free by like an elder family. And so like all of the money that they get from the organization, they often spend like on leasing like a fancy car for them to like rip around in and just like on super extravagant bullshit. But they're building a dependence for these people, right? And if they were ever to move away from, and it's the same thing for the folks in Bethel. So if you are able to leave Bethel, or if you were ever to, because eventually you do leave Bethel, right? You go on to a different congregation where the quote, quote, the need is great. Or if you ever stop being a district overseer or a circuit overseer, those like stipends and those payments cease. And the organization quite often will say, well, you were a religious, we're a religious organization and you were a volunteer, so we're kicking you out, but have fun trying to get unemployment, like, for your transition period. So they will, like, they will basically tell them, you can't apply for unemployment because we're not going to pay for that shit. However, that has been, I believe in Spain, they tried to do that to some Bethelites, and the government was like, no, in fact, we don't fucking care. You are getting unemployment. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, which was great, because finding work is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And especially now, finding work is hard. I couldn't imagine anyone leaving Bethel or being, having an assignment removed and then suddenly not having the money to pay for basically what you were able to pay for, right? So,
but on the other hand, they weren't thinking of the future. Not to like shame or like diss it on anyone, but like if you're not having to pay for everything and all you're doing is spending your money on like junk, and aren't Jehovah's Witnesses like not supposed to be into money anyway?
Well, true, but that's part of that thought and behavior
control,
right? Like, it doesn't matter how much you're making now, because tomorrow could never exist, might not exist.
Yeah, that's
right.
True.
Like, I could go to sleep, and tomorrow Armageddon could be here. I don't have to pay my fucking bills. I don't have to buy out my lease. I don't have to do this or that. It doesn't matter. The organization is taking care of me, and I don't really have to think about retirement or what the future is, because I'm conditioned to think that every day is going to be this world's last.
That is so fucking weird. I could never.
Right.
Like, how, what is the point in doing that to people even?
No idea. It's just, it's how you keep money coming in, and it's how you keep people attached.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any day now, end of the world. Gotta be ready.
It's been any day for the last fucking 110 years. Jesus fucking Christ. Okay. Yeah.
I guess we just don't get it because we're not like shitheads who want to take advantage of people, and we actually want like people to thrive and live their best lives. But
for sure. Yeah, absolutely. So obviously they restrict your leisure, your entertainment, your vacation time. Like, what are you doing for fun? What kind of things are you watching, and what are you putting into your brain, and where are you taking vacation? Like, are you going to Vegas? You shouldn't go to Vegas. It's bad there. Like,
I mean, they're not wrong.
I mean, it's not, it's, they're not wrong, but like,
Vegas sucks. Sorry if you live in Vegas.
But like, you know what I mean, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just that kind of idea. Like, it's, go enjoy what you want to enjoy, but don't enjoy it too much. Like, obviously, you know, there's major time spent with group indoctrination. Back when I was still in the organization, there were 3 meetings a week. So that we had a Tuesday meeting, we had a Thursday group study, we had Sunday morning meetings, and then we had Saturday morning door-to-door work. It was all in. There's so much fucking time taken up by like indoctrination rituals. Then we had, you know, Monday night family study night. So like that's no. The self-indoctrine thing. They're super, super hard on making sure that part of their preaching is using JW.org, which is where all of their everything is kept. So it's easy to preach to people.
The kid shows?
Like the kid shows as well. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
They just make me sad watching.
It's really depressing. And it's actually, it makes me very angry to like even watch 5 minutes of those things. And that's a lot of information to process. So obviously thoughts, feelings, and activities reported to superiors. So if you have like any sort of, like this goes back to, you know, who you can have sex with and how you can have sex. But, you know, any of your thoughts and feelings, the things you've done, if you feel any bad way about them and you think they might have gone against doctrine, you should report it to the elders and you're probably going to get reproved for it. Basically, they have like a reward and punishment kind of system in that a lot of times you will be both publicly rewarded and like, oh yeah, you know, brother X, sister X did this. They're so great. Thanks for helping out. But also, if you've done something and you were found out or you had to have like a talk with the elders, sometimes they will do a public reproval at a meeting, which is super fucking shitty. Like they do not encourage individual thinking. They do not encourage critical thinking as much as they do say that they encourage it within like their literature. But it is the group think, right? Like make sure that you're discussing these things with your fellow members, you know. If you want to do this critical thinking thing, you do it as a group so that someone can talk you off a ledge and be like, hey, I'm going to pull out the Bible and the latest Watchtower. And then we can talk about what God and the organization says about it. They encourage and engage in corporal punishment. So there is a... not just in Australia, but in Australia, in the UK, not so much here in North America. There's been a large, I think almost like government funded child sex abuse investigation lobbied against the Jehovah's Witnesses and a lot of other religious organizations. But the idea is like they're not encouraging child sex abuse, but they, if they hear about it, they do everything they can to not report it to the authorities. However, when it comes to corporal punishment, they're like, well, you know, God says to not spare the rod. So if you need to beat your kid, obviously, you know, you're the head of the household. So you do what you feel needs to be done. You know, if there's no marks, then we can't be concerned for you, basically. You know, keep it below the neck and, you know, we just shrug. you know, they threaten to harm family members or friends, you know, they can cut off. And that's, this particular one is a little bit weird. It shouldn't, I don't know if it should necessarily be in orange, but it could very well be that it is a specific thing to Bethelites in that maybe you're not allowed to, like, maybe you don't have phone privileges if you fuck something up. So that one I'm still not 100% sure on. But they do the disfellowshipping thing, and when you're disfellowshipped, your family cannot talk to you. Your friends cannot talk to you. Nobody in the congregation can talk to you. So it's literally, you are just cut right off. I would probably put that in like the red. But they could be doing something, referencing something else. And again, instilling dependency and obedience. So, you know, you're dependent on this organization for your everything, right? They are your community. They are the people who make you feel like you have something, right? And a lot of your family, you're very likely raised in it. So your family is probably there. You're probably not going to be the first generation of Jehovah's Witness. It's very unlikely in a lot of ways. So it really like, it really sort of solidifies a lot of that behavioral control. Information control. Deception. So deliberately withholding information, distorting information to make it more acceptable, systematically lying to cult members. So they will often take information from news, from like right any sort of like popular media, any sort of things like that, and will use it as a as a way to sort of like distort your idea of the world, of what is going on out there. I remember at one convention back when I was a teenager, someone was like, they made a point to call out The Simpsons, and Matt Groening at one point like made an offhanded joke about, oh yeah, I regret ever making, like, of course I regret making Bart Simpson, like he's a bad influence, blah blah blah. And it was just kind of a joke, but they took that and they took it as if he was actually saying that about his own creation. And they're like, well, you don't want to watch a thing like The Simpsons because it's really bad, and it only teaches your kids to be disobedient. Even like the creator was like, I regret creating Bart Simpsons, and I never should have done that. So they will take even the simplest of things, even if it was a joke, even if it was offhanded, and try and turn it into a, like, this is a truth. This is how the world really thinks. Even they are displeased with what they've done with themselves. They also sort of minimize or discourage access to non-cult sources of information. So, like, you know, watch what you watch on TV, watch what you read, watch what you listen to on the radio, you know, other media on the internet. Basically, what they say is the internet is for JW.org. It's where we keep all of our information. You should, if you're having a crisis of faith, go to JW.org and do your research. Like, not like broaden your horizons and compare, but just go here and get into our echo chamber and absorb our information. They don't want you talking to former members. They always want you busy so that you don't have time to think or investigate or do any of the stuff that might lead you to thoughts of doubt. Again, compartmentalizing information into outsider and insider doctrines. So it's the us versus them. That is the world, right? Like, that is calling everyone else the world and us God's people, or being part of the truth. And the thing that actually, there's one thing that I meant to bring up, and I want to bring it up now because it was also part of a behavior control. And I completely forgot about it getting on my rant. But they have this idea called putting on the new personality. And back in 99, this article is from 99, but they still use the term these days, even as recently as an article from like 2019. So from 1999, Christians appreciate knowing the truth. We have learned how to live in order to avoid the course of those in the world. Being alienated from the life that belongs to God, they are in darkness mentally. So putting on the new personality involves being made new in the force actuating our minds. How does one make that force or mental disposition new so as to be inclined in the right direction? Putting on the new personality, we set ourselves apart from the world by our way. Our way of life makes us different. We speak truth and use wholesome speech to build others up, which isn't exactly true. We control our anger, also not true. Bitterness, screaming, abusiveness, and all badness, and replace those with righteous, godly qualities. We go beyond what is usually required of us in being forgiving. All of this is done readily from the heart. A lot of untruth, but this is their whole, this is part of like their behavioral control and their, and that's from 99. Now, if we go back, this article called Treasures from God's Word, Strip Off the Old and Clothe Yourselves in the New. Did you make big changes in your personality when you came into the truth? You can be sure that Jehovah was pleased with your efforts. However, continuous effort is needed in order to prevent traits from the old personality to keep surfacing up, keep from surfacing, and to keep displaying the new personality. And then they're like, am I still holding grudges? Do I show patience even if I'm in a hurry? Do I have immoral thoughts? Do I dismiss them quickly? Do I have negative feelings about people of another race or nationality? Have I recently spoken unkindly to anyone or lost my temper? So like all of these things are meant to make you feel guilty about what you once were and try to shape you into something new.
This is definitely healthy.
Right. But you have to remember, like, for the, especially for information control, that sort of also loops back into your behavioral control, because now you're saying, well, if you're talking to former members who are critical of the organization, well, they're going to instill some old personality ways back into you. They're going to open up that, that look into the world again, and that could seep in. This next one is really important because I've had it happen to me numerous times. Encouraging spying on other members. imposing buddy systems to monitor and control members, reporting deviant thoughts, feelings, and actions to leadership, ensure that individual behavior is monitored by the group. So even when I was in high school, someone found out that I had asked a girl out. My mom showed up on, like, so my mom and I used to have dinner together every Wednesday. And because I was living with my dad full time. And in one of her trips, she had to grab something from a store where this particular friend that I had asked out, her mom worked, they knew each other, they were discussing the thing. Well, my brother's JW best friend also worked with her and overheard the conversation. And that got back to my dad, who was an elder. So like this whole like, oh, I found out some information, so Nathan like asked out a worldly girl at school, it's bad, so I had talking to, obviously. When I was living in Penticton and with my with my sister and my brother-in-law, I was out for drinks with a couple of friends, non-JWs. And a couple of folks saw me and they like came up and they're like, so what are you doing here? And I'm like, having some dinner, I guess. Like, oh, okay, well, whatever. And I had a beer in front of me and I had my meal and whatnot. And the next, like, I got pulled in to a meeting at like the next meeting day. They just pulled me into a back room and they're like, hey, we heard you were out drinking with like worldly people. Is this true? And I was like, I work with them. We went out for a bite to eat. Cool. Thanks. Bye. But like, that stuff happens because they want to make sure that you're like following the thoughts. The next one is extensive use of cult generated information and propaganda. So newsletters, magazines, audio tapes, videotapes, all of that shit, YouTube, misquoting statements, or using them, or using out of context. Non-cult sources. They do this so much and they print it in their things. So for the longest time, the JWs had one of the largest printing factories strictly for like the printing of like their Watchtower magazines, their books, their Awake magazines, whatever they had. It was fucking being printed there, distributed, and sent out worldwide. So I'm not 100% sure on board. Sorry, I'm not 100% sure on how all that goes now. I know that they liquidated a bunch of property because obviously they had like millions of dollars in lawyers' fees that they needed. And so they got a bunch of fucking money. I expect that they're... all of their printing and everything is now like being done in Warwick, New York, which is where their main campus is. But yeah, so again, like Courtney mentioned, the Caleb and Sophia videos that they put out, like those animated videos that that tell kids that being gay is bad and like birthdays are like shitty. Mm-hmm. And evil, because like one birthday happened in the Bible and someone died at it. Like, it's all super fucking weird.
How you can't play with your friend's toys because they're a wizard and magic is evil. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So all of, but they have an extensive library of movies and magazines and everything, and every single Watchtower magazine and every single book and every single video is meant to keep you only informed about what they want you to be informed about. So when it comes to, when it comes to learning and figuring out anything within the organization, they always loop you back to their YouTube channels or JW.org. And even now, they are, it has been noticed by a lot of people who are still going to meetings that the Bible is actually being used less and less. Sometimes not at all in their, in like the talks that they're doing. So when sisters go up to the podium to teach, it is always a, it's always either a study, and I mentioned this in one of the previous episodes, when we discussed how the meetings function. It's always in a study with another sister. And they're always sitting down, they're never standing. But recently, a lot of these talks have been, well, we're going to go to the website and we're going to discuss what's on the website. Less, we're going to go to the Bible. Which is wild to me.
That's really weird.
It's super weird. Yeah. So like the fact that they're very much, and they, so one of the things that they are very big on is idolatry. Like, you do not have idols anywhere. You like the cross with Jesus, a picture of Mary, anything like that, that would resemble something that you would kneel down and pray to or use as an idol, not allowed. However, now every single JW Kingdom Hall has this big fucking JW.org sign on it. And like, JWs will like take pictures together and be like, yeah, JW.org behind them, like if they're at a convention. And I'm like, how is that not the same thing? What are we doing here?
Are they praying to the JW.org sign? Is that the,
I mean, I wouldn't, I wouldn't be fucking surprised. They're not, but
hilarious if true.
Yes. The next is an unethical use of confession. So you know, information about sins is used to disrupt and or dissolve identity boundaries. This goes back to the encouraging spying on other members. They outwardly say, well, we don't want to gossip and we don't want to, you don't want to slander anyone's name.
You don't. I do.
Well, of course, but they still do. They still do.
Yeah. Oh no.
Right? Obviously. Because
they only want gossip when it benefits them.
Absolutely. Yes.
Gossip benefits everyone, honestly. Except for the people who are up to no fucking good, and everyone else is talking about how they're up to no fucking good.
Well, that's the thing, right? And so here's my take on it. And I think you're the one that posted that on Instagram a little while ago about gossip, right?
Yeah, I've become like a huge fan and advocate for gossip.
Yeah.
I think it's a wonderful tool, and I think it's demonized because it's a tool that women use to protect themselves.
Absolutely. And I think that was a really good point that was made, which I wanted to be cognizant of when I came to this, because they refer to it as gossip. I'm going to refer to it strictly as slander, because they will take whatever information that they get first, whatever information that they are told, and they will run with it. So, up until, God, I don't know, a year ago, my sister, who I do not talk to, always assumed that the reason I left the organization was because I got into a relationship with my son's mom. Oh, I just assumed it was her fault. Well, I told her otherwise, and she was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I didn't really realize. No, you didn't realize, but you figured that slandering my name by saying, oh, he just fell in love with some woman and he's fucking off the rails now, is a really good way to help someone come back to the religion and the organization. Mm-hmm. But now, because that is the information that you ran with, that is the information that the organization assumes is true. And they don't fucking care. They don't give a shit. All they care about is, like you said, Kayla, what benefits them? What is going to make them look better? So, again, they will withhold forgiveness or absolution until you do things the way they want you to. And there is, and it's a lot. You basically have to come, and in some ways, if you follow all of their rules and you follow every step of the return to work plan, you might still be denied getting reinstated into the organization. You might have done all of this work thinking that maybe you'll be able to, you know, reconnect with your family and your friends and everything, and they're like, yeah, I don't think you're repentant enough. Try again in a year or something. So yeah, it's big. So the next area is thought control. So obviously they require members to internalize the group doctrine as truth. Again, very on the point, they call it the truth. You have to adopt the group's map of reality as reality. So everything that we learn here is God's will. It doesn't matter if it changes. It doesn't matter if we go back on our word. We do not apologize because we're imperfect humans. And if we change, well, it's just because we learned. They instill black and white thinking. This is obviously good. This is bad. If you don't do it the way that we're instructed to, then we're obviously on the bad side.
Missionary good, blowjobs bad.
Pretty much, yeah. They make you, they are, again, they organize people into us versus them. So it is us versus the world, right? It is us versus Satan's world. Obviously, I've never seen this before or experienced this, but sometimes they will change a person's name and identity. That might happen with, again, the more cloistered groups like Bethelites.
Just like, I don't like your name. It's not godly enough. You're now named Esther.
Yeah, maybe.
Wow.
The use of loaded language and cliches, which constrict knowledge, stop critical thoughts, reduce complexities into platitudes and buzzwords. Again, we could go back to that article about when you're a good Christian, you know, is happy to learn the truth. And when you learn the truth, you start, it leads the way to putting on the new personality and stripping away the old things of the world. I kind of feel sick to my stomach that I just did that. Anyway, encourage only good and proper thoughts. So again, back to that, those questions about clothing yourself in the, with the new. Did I have an immoral thought? Did I dismiss it quickly? Stuff like that, like good and proper thoughts. Did I have a negative thought about someone who wasn't of the same race or ethnicity, or do I still have grudges? You know, those are bad. I have to feel guilty about things that I've, about what I've done.
Fuck Ryan.
Yep.
I always think like the toxic positive thinking is, it's so interesting because like so many thought control groups use it, and not even like thought, it's like society at large. It's like, oh, well, don't be negative. Don't be like, think about the bright side. Like, oh, we'll focus on the good. Or, and you're like, but you still have to pay attention to the bad things that are happening. You still have to see that they're happening and think about them and think about how you can prevent them and how you can make things better. And like right now with Palestine, I watch so much of it. I see so much of it. I share a lot of it. I don't share everything I see. I try not to share the super graphic things only because a lot of the time it has to do with children, and I am very mindful of my friends who have lost theirs, and I don't want to upset them more than they already are or make their days harder. And maybe that's not what I should be doing, but it's what I'm going to do. But like Jake was asking me, like, why are you watching that? Why are you doing that? I'm like, because if I don't like acknowledge that it's happening and know about it, like what it's awful. Like someone has to see it. Someone has to acknowledge it. Cause I think what happens is if all of us turned away every time, then we wouldn't be having these large movements to help these people who really need our help, who are being murdered and oppressed and starved to death. And an important thing that we remember that like not everything can be positive, but also that like it's okay to sit with the negativity and sit with the grief and use it to try and make change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I don't want to get too much into this obviously today, but like I appreciate that you're posting that, and because like I've started sort of reposting it as well, because it's important to have out there, and it's important to understand that these are the things that are happening in our world. There is such a thing as toxic positivity. and especially when it comes to the things that are happening in Palestine, like the last number that I saw was that there was over 30,000 Palestinians that were dead because of this, basically, literally a terrorist act from a government organization. Mm-hmm. Many, if not most, are children and women that have been killed. And, y'all, I'm not sorry for having this brief bit of politics in our podcast, because this is mostly about human rights. And if you're on board with genocide, then I'm sorry, fuck you. But like,
I'm not sorry. I'll say it. Fuck you.
Yeah,
fuck
I'm the not. I'm not. On, yeah, I'm kid. Not really sorry. Not but yeah, it's that sorry. Canadianism, right?
I know. That's why you need me to come in and be like, I'm not afraid. Fuck you.
But this all does tie back into, like cult behaviors filter into our everyday life. We are not seeing it in North American, media because it is not allowed. Mm-hmm. A lot of our agencies our governments are supporting Israel in some way or another, either by funds, weapons, etc. And a lot of our media is being asked to not cover the damage being done in Palestine. And in a lot of ways, that aligns with what happens within cults, within high control religions, in how, on the opposite side, they will use the fact that places are being decimated to say, this is what's happening all over the world, and this is why you should only be with us. So it is about,
or this is control. Happening to them because they're, you know, not as good or bad, and it's a colonial thing, right? Like,
absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Like there's a genocide happening in Congo, but like they're underdeveloped and look at how savage they are, when yep. really the reason why there are these things happening is because of colonial interference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry for the tangent.
No, it's all good. it's perfectly okay. So, hypnotic techniques to alter mental states, undermine critical thinking, and even age regress the member. This seems wild to me. I don't know if this has got to be like more of like a conditioning thing within like being like a Bethelite and being within such a enclosed area. Because as a Bethelite, you get up, you go to breakfast, they do morning worship together. And like even rote, like the regular routine of doing something over and over and over and over can have a similar effect of like hypnotic technique or mental manipulation, et cetera, et cetera. You don't have to be stuck in a room or with a single person over and over. So, and the continual battery of being basically at JW College or university would really sort of undermine those critical thinking techniques that you would really want to develop to sort of avoid these things. Memories that are manipulated, false memories created. So they do this a lot in their, oh, well, we were really kind of wrong about like some of the dates that we might have thought about, but it's okay because it's going to happen soon anyway. So let's just forget about this misinterpretation that we had.
We just misplaced the decimal. It's fine.
Well, yeah. And that's a lot of, and that's a lot of it, right? Like it's, they had this whole calculation at one point where, there was the destruction of Babylon was supposed to happen in 607 BC. And the reality is like their timing was off by like almost 100 years or something like that. And it was within 100 years, but it was off, and which threw all of their other calculations off, because they had determined based on it that Jesus was going to come in 1914, and that's when the start of the end of the world was going to happen, and we were all going to be free, and by now we should all be in paradise, but we're not. And they still sort of base a lot of their doctrine off of like those original dates. But they never really, they do not believe in apologizing for their mistakes. They say, oh, well, we're imperfect and God will forgive us. We're moving on. It is very much a we're moving on situation. They might want you as rank and file to be repentant and to apologize. But you'll never see the elders apologizing. You'll never see the governing body apologizing. You'll never see the organization apologize for anything, because they're imperfect and it's okay to be imperfect. We just move on. So they teach thought stopping techniques, basically to try to shut down any sort of reality testing, right? Any negative thoughts, only allowing positive thoughts. So like love bombing and all of that, right? Like the toxic positivity, as we were referring to. Basically any sort of denial, rationalization, justification, or wishful thinking sort of override your reality, your like dips into what is reality. They don't really like the term meditation, I'm going to sit down and center myself. They use meditation as a form of study, right? Like you need to meditate on the scriptures. You need to really think about the scriptures and what they're telling you. You need to internalize them, and you need to connect yourself with God in that way. So it's like, if you're having doubts, you need to go to the scriptures and you need to go to JW.org and you need to research all of our propaganda and meditate on it. So it really soaks into your mind and makes you a fucking clone. Like you are just another cog in the machine. Praying is another one that they use. Like you have to pray, and if you pray and pray and pray, eventually you will feel like God is answering your prayers. Also singing or humming. They sing at the beginning of a meeting and they sing at the end of a meeting. And they also sing in the middle of the meeting between the two parts of it. It is all part of being, it is all being part of the group, being a community. Rejection of rational analysis, critical thinking, and constructive criticism. So, and again, they forbid critical questions about the leaders or the doctrine or policies. And they label alternative belief systems as illegitimate, evil, or not useful. So, all of this sort of like comes in kind of together, right? Like, higher education, going to university, is bad because it teaches critical thinking. It teaches you rational analysis. It teaches you how to offer constructive criticism. All of these things are things that they don't want you to know. And they get uppity when you're like, okay, but you said this, but really it's like this. They don't want, if you criticize a decision made by the governing body, unless if it's you alone, you are going to be labeled as like basically the equivalent of like a suppressive. There is going to be a lot of gossip going around about you. And it's probably going to break down a lot of relationships. Your friends are probably going to stop associating with you because you had constructive criticism, or you questioned a policy that the governing body was like, hey, we were wrong about this, but now you got to do this. Again, they will outwardly criticize other cults and say, well, they had it wrong. But we're the truth. And so every other belief system, whether you're a Catholic, whether you're a Mormon, whether you were part of Jonestown, like it doesn't fucking matter. It is all evil and it is not useful. You do not want to be involved with any of that shit because it is not the religion God chose. We are the religion God chose. So emotional control. Again, manipulating and narrowing the range of feelings. So are you feeling angry at someone? Are you holding a grudge? Are you thinking impure thoughts? Those are all evil and wrong, and they all come from the world, and they all come from Satan. God is love, and you have to love everyone. Everything is good. Being part of the organization is good. And you have to be happy. You have to love the fact that you're going out and you're teaching people about God's word. Always be happy. Again, making people feel that the problems are always their own fault, never the leader's or the group's fault. This circles back into never apologizing. We're all imperfect people. So any of your feelings are obviously your fault, but we don't have to apologize for them, and we never will. But you should feel guilty about what you're feeling. Again, promoting feelings of guilt or unworthiness. They are always, always harping on the fact that you can always do more. I'm going to go back to that article again. Jehovah was pleased by your efforts. However, continuous effort is needed in order to prevent traits of the old personality from surfacing. Right? Like, always be on. Always be better. If you're not always being better, you're not shit. Like, that's what it is. If you are okay with who you are, you probably shouldn't be. So identity guilt.
Fuck. You can't fucking win.
You can't win. No. Again, you're not living up to your potential. Your family is probably not good enough. You got to whip your family into shape. And this is a big one for like elders. Because if any of your family step out of line, like the rest of the congregation is like, well, are you even fit to be an elder? I remember one time my stepsister and I were like, we straight up asked my dad and my stepmom, why are you dragging us to the Kingdom Hall 3 times a week if we don't even believe in this shit? And my dad was like, because you're under my roof and this is how I'm raising you. You come with us. And I was like, all right, okay, fine. I don't want to get into a fight over this. But a couple days later, my stepmom comes up to both of us and says, just so you know, like, your dad is thinking about stepping down as an elder because you guys don't believe, like, said you don't believe, and, you know, you need to do better. And I'm like, well, it's not my fucking problem. Like, I don't care. And you know what my dad didn't do? He didn't step down. Because my dad likes to have power. And you know what? A lot of elders like to have power. That's why they're where they fucking are. But they're still going to use their power to make you feel like fucking shit about yourself. They will always make you question your past. They will always make you feel bad about the things you've done in your past. A lot of us already have enough anxiety about that one time that we tried to talk to somebody and we tripped over our words and suddenly we felt like the smallest person in the world. And then we think about it like when we go to bed and it keeps us up for an extra 45 minutes to 3 hours. We don't need that every fucking day. But you know what? For the next 50 years. Your affiliations are unwise. Oh, you like went out for a beer with like this one person who's super harmless from your job. You should really reconsider. Your thoughts and feelings personally and your actions are irrelevant or they're selfish. You have to think about the organization. You have to think about how all of those things that you do reflect on God's organization. This is huge. This part right here. We talked about very briefly about the investigations happening in Australia and in the UK about the child sex abuse scandal. But this also applies to sisters who have been raped, sexually assaulted, and want to go to the police. Quite often, they are discouraged from doing so. Because if they go to the police, they are told by the elders, by the organization, that you will bring reproach upon Jehovah and his organization.
I love how, like, humans are insignificant and shitty and terrible, and we need God to tell us what he can do. But us doing one small thing will just ruin his life.
Absolutely.
And undermine his power.
Yep. Yeah. They don't want to deal with the backlash. They don't want to deal with the media. They don't want to deal with any of that. So if it doesn't fucking happen, then, like, countless times where a woman will come to the elders and they say, well, you can't go to the police. Or they will have gone to the police first and then go to the elders. And the elders will say, you have to drop the charges. Because if you don't, it'll bring reproach upon Jehovah, and it'll be your fault. It'll be your fault, and the organization will look poorly upon you because you did this. And, like, in every case, when a woman goes to the elders, whenever there is some sort of situation, and even when people who have had sex out of wedlock go and confess about it, they go through a rigorous questioning period of seriously inappropriate questions. So for women, it's, well, what were you wearing? Were you inviting this sort of behavior from the man? Like, were you in a dark place? Why did you do this thing? Why were you out there? What did you do? Why did you do this? What were you doing? If it's like a couple who ended up having sex before they got married, it's even worse. It's like, oh, was there penetration? Did you orgasm? Did you do this? Did you do that? It is a whole list of seriously invasive questions that really only seem to be like self-fulfilling for the elders in the room. Like a bunch of old men getting off wondering how these young people like were fucking, I guess. It is all part of like instilling fear. And really, really, really ingraining that guilt. It is fucking gross. Moving on. Social guilt, historical guilt. Obviously, your past is suspect, or what you've done in the past is like fucking terrible. Obviously, instilling fear. Thinking like fear of thinking independently, or fear of the outside world. Like, the world is bad. Everyone out in the world just wants to do harm to you. Even if they seem nice, they have ulterior motives. Fear of God's enemies, which is basically everyone who does not agree with the organization, losing one's salvation. So if you bring reproach on God's organization, you are going to lose your salvation. You know, fear of leaving or being left, all of these things. Like if you go out there, you're going to leave behind the organization, and the organization is not going to associate with you. Everything that you ever had is going to disappear.
Yes.
But another thing about instilling fear is that the organization runs on fear, right? Having a healthy fear of God is part of their whole thing. God is love, but you should still fear God. And you should also have a fear that if you do anything wrong, well, what happens if Armageddon's tomorrow and then you didn't repent? Well, shit, you might lose salvation. Like, because Armageddon could come any time now. And then what would happen? Again, the extremes of emotional highs and lows. So the love bombing and praise, and then immediately calling you a horrible sinner, like, once you turn the corner. Again, phobia indoctrination. Basically, like, instilling irrational fears about leaving the group or questioning the leader's authority. If you're outside the group, you don't have happiness or fulfillment. You can't get any of that stuff. There's never a legitimate reason to leave, and those who leave are weak, undisciplined, unspiritual, worldly, brainwashed by a family or a counselor. You know, money, sex, rock and roll, blah, blah, blah. You know, basically anything in the world that is going to be that might seem enticing is just a bad reason to leave, and you should never do it. And then the last one, obviously, threats of harm to an ex-member of family. That just means, like, for Jehovah's Witnesses, it's never, like, threatening. I don't think it's really ever threatening those people. It is just, like, the harm comes in terms of your connections, your family connections, your friends, right? If you leave the organization, if you're disfellowshipped, if you disassociate, then you are being pushed away and people cannot associate with you. They can't even ask you why you left or why you were disfellowshipped. And that is part of the information control, right? So if you call someone and try to explain why you were disfellowshipped after the announcement or before the announcement, depends on how in they are, they will probably hang up. They might, you could send them a text message. They might ignore the text message. They might read it. But usually they will tell you, hey, you're disfellowshipped. We can't contact each other anymore. Your family can still talk to you, but like only in things that involve important family matters. So, you know. There is a lot of control tactics there. A lot of ways that folks a lot of ways that Jehovah's Witnesses as the organization they put rules in place to shape who you are as a person within their organization and to keep you tied to them. And again, like, there's a lot of like mind control techniques that they use. A lot of that has to do with fear. A lot of it has to do with guilt and retaining your family relationships and your friends' relationships comes like guilt and, you know, your own actions. So internalizing guilt, fear of other people guilting you, fear of like being publicly shamed. But just to give everyone on the outside who may not be following along, there are only 6 green lines in this whole thing, and there's got to be like 45 lines throughout this whole document of, is this a cult or not? So we talked a lot over the last hour and a half about this. Definitely, if you are interested, if you're curious about, you know, maybe organizations you've heard of, things that you might be curious of, things that might just give you the wrong feeling when people discuss them with you. Freedom of Mind is a very good website. A lot of articles. They go through a lot of very different information, bunch of different organizations. They do like to use the BITE model, which is great. It is a great standard for trying to figure out whether maybe you're in a bit of a, maybe someone you might know, maybe it's you, maybe it's other folks, maybe in a bit of a questionable organization. But always, like, please continue learning, figure out, you know, what's going on. If something seems off, like, don't just use the information provided by said organization. Always broaden your horizons. Look for other things to compare. And especially if, like, specific quotes while you're reading something seem off, definitely look into that shit. Because misappropriation of information is huge. That's all I got for today, but I'm hoping that this is a really good sort of example of how control techniques are done within organizations, especially the more shady ones, because we're going to have a little more of this coming up soon. So, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Not a good time. BITE model.
No.
That's it for this week. Next week, we're back, and Hallie's going to tell us all about Jonathan Wild, the thief-taker general in The First Fence. We go back to the early 1700s and explore the seedy underbelly of London and early organized crime. As always, links, pictures, and additional information can be found on our website at thehumanexception.com. To keep up with all things exceptional, be sure to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at thehumanexception. Have a story you want us to cover? Want to tell us that we're wrong? You just want to say hi? You can email us at thehumanexception@gmail.com. And to get on the fun, you can join our Discord server. Link can be found on our contact page. Keep on being exceptional, humans, and have a wonderful weekend.